The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
The theme I thought I could explore with you today is tranquility. Tranquility is often associated with meditation, becoming calm. And it belongs to a class of qualities that are easy to underappreciate. And in our society, sometimes tranquility is supported, but in many situations there's not much support for being tranquil. In fact, sometimes people get worried, that against it. Some years ago, there was an elderly man who started coming here to IMC. And after being here for a few years, he said his kids, his extended family, started to get worried about him. And, you know, what's wrong with old dad? Is he getting senile or something? And the reason that you have trouble hearing out there? There's no volume out there?
It's cranked up all the way.
It's cranked up all the way, it says. There's more space in here. We can wait till some of you can come in. There's lots of chairs, at least six or seven. And the rest of us can be tranquil while we wait. One of the things that supports tranquility is that nothing needs to happen. Oh, I should talk so you can find out. Is it working out there?
It's slow.
It's slow. So you still come in. There's chairs in here. We'll wait. Oh, it works over you?
It works.
Oh, yeah, that works everywhere. Okay. So so this fellow, you know, his kids were worried about him, but what's happening to old dad? And he said, what happened was that I'd become tranquil. And he had spent a lifetime being anxious. And so the personality change was so big from, you know, the person they always knew who was always anxious about things to the person who'd settled down and become calm, that they were worried about him. But he thought there was nothing wrong. And I was remembering that you know, there's sometimes we go into situations, places that are calm, they're calming, and tranquil environments. And one of the, I've been in many meditation halls, that the halls themselves are very tranquil. You go in there and it's this feeling of stillness, of peace that's there. And like one of them is the Green Gulch Meditation Hall, Green Gulch Zen Center in Marin. I spent many years living there. And I can remember going and meditating, doing the Zen meditation there, a number of times a lot of times when I was there, the teacher would go around and adjust people's posture. Straight, in Zen you have to be really straight, so they adjust your posture. And it was a very interesting phenomena that if I was tranquil, if I was calm and present, then they would sneak up behind me, because you're sitting meditating, you know, wouldn't notice anybody else around, they'd be very quiet. And they'd put their hand gently on your shoulder when they're going to adjust your posture. If I was tranquil, I would be like water, just very fluid. It's like, oh, you know, just kind of just go with it. And even though it was a surprise, it came out of nowhere. But if I was involved in some kind of preoccupation, sitting there thinking I was meditating, but thinking about something, involved in something, lost in something, and then they came and touched my shoulder, I'd be startled. And so this relationship between, you know, how we're affected by the world around us and where our mind is, what goes on within, that if we're agitated, caught up in things, it can be much more jarring to have, you know, things happen to you and interrupt the flow of what you're doing, what you're involved in. And then I was thinking, I was traveling recently, airports and stuff, and cities and different things, and it struck me how many environments in our society are not tranquil. And you know the scene in the airports where they have this television on. Everywhere you go, so many places they have television. And I don't find television so tranquil to have the sound, television sound around. And then if you get, you know, interested in what's on television, then the loudspeaker goes on. So you can't hear what's on the TV. And anyway, and so in those environments, it's really helpful to be able to bring your own tranquility with you. And if your tranquility depends on the environment, then you are going to be a kind of a victim and a slave to the environment, whatever's going on. So how do we cultivate a deeper sense of tranquility so it becomes portable? We take it with us. And how do we be tranquil so that we feel vitalized by it, we feel enlivened by it, as opposed to a kind of tranquility which is a dampening down of some vitality, life? I think one of the first things is to appreciate it and to have some real experience of it in some way. Some people can have it by being in nature, being quiet. Some people just being alone. A variety of different settings where it can happen. For me, when I started meditating, what was important was memories I had as a child of being tranquil, or being as a younger person being tranquil. And those, they were kind of like, you know, forgotten memories, repressed memories. And so when I started meditating, maybe touching close to that, those levels of tranquility that I had in special situations, those memories came flooding back. And one of the memories was riding a bus home from school every day. I took a city bus, and this was in Italy. And I learned somehow that if I sat at a particular seat in the bus, the conductor, there was two people, the driver and the conductor would, you know, at the end of the route, would tabulate up all the tickets he sold, the round trip, the one way, the child, the adult, the old, you know, elderly, whatever it was. And if I sat in the right place, he would sit right in front of me, and he would start tabulating up on this graph paper all the things he sold. And if I sat there and just watched him do his work, I got really tranquil. Now, I can't explain that exactly, because maybe I got concentrated, got absorbed in his absorption, just kind of got focused, and everything else dropped away. But what was significant was how peaceful I got. And maybe children have that ability to kind of, you know, in certain unusual environments, to kind of get really calm. Maybe you've had that. Or then when I was 18, I wasn't a kid anymore, but I was traveling around France, and I came to a place called Mont Saint-Michel. It looks like it's made by Disney in the distance. It's this huge monastery cathedral that towers out of these flat plains of northern France, and a little bit out at sea, a little island. So I went there, spent the night there, I got a tour of the monastery. And when we walked through at the very top of the hill, which it's built on, and the monastery is built on the hill, the very top of the hill, around the hill on top of it, is a little chapel that's at the heart of this huge monastery complex, a little stone chapel that was built, I don't know, in the 800s or something. And then the monastery was built around the little chapel, a stone chapel. And I entered into the stone chapel, and it was kind of cool, this big, you know, cool rocks, and very simple, rustic, you know, nothing of the grandeur of the cathedral that was there around it. I got really tranquil, really peaceful. And everything got stopped. Everything got still and quiet. I was in a group, but I let the group go so I could stay and linger as long as possible, because it was so meaningful to have that peace and that stillness and that tranquility. So it's certainly nice to have those experiences, and to have certain degrees of tranquility like that can be very healing. The ways in which we might be at war with ourselves, or fractured, or upset, or agitated. So it's very helpful. But more helpful than how it might settle something or heal something is what we might learn from it. And so to take the experience of tranquility you've had, whether it's a minor tranquility or it's a major experience maybe you've had once or twice in your lifetime, and to learn from that, and learn in particular what is it that's not present when you're tranquil? And what is it that arises that causes you to lose it? Because then if you start understanding those conditions, then you might be able to address those conditions in your daily life. So, so for example, I've noticed that I'm more tranquil if I don't take things personally. And I'm capable of getting quite agitated if I take things really personally. You know, it says, whatever's happening, it says something about me. And relating everything to me and my history and how people see me and all that. And it, very quickly, the mind can get all worked up. But if I can just let things be as they are without needing to relate it to some representation I have of myself, then I can stay more calm. And in the strong experiences of tranquility I've had, it's almost as if I don't matter, or let's say it differently. I suppose I matter, but that there's no self-conscious concern, preoccupation, worry about myself and what people think of me, and I'm just there. There is so in tranquil states, there's perhaps no attachment. Buddhism puts a tremendous amount of emphasis on this relationship between tranquility, is that tranquility, it comes with an absence of clinging. So if we're clinging to something, then it's basically not going to be any tranquility there. The more we grasp, the less tranquility there is. It's like a constriction, a tightening of the mind, a narrowing down, a spinning around that goes on. So then, can we study, can we get interested in clinging, study it, find out? And then there's a very powerful question you can ask yourself. I think it's very significant around, if you notice that you're attached to something, attached means there's compulsive thinking, compulsive desire, means that you can't put it down, that you can't say, oh, you know, it's nice if it happens, but, you know, if it doesn't happen, I'm at ease with that. The serenity prayer, right? Let me be serene about the things I have to accept, and the courage to change what I have to change, and the wisdom to know the difference. So, you know, if you can have that serenity, then you're not attached. But if there's attachment, so the very powerful question is why is it more important for you to cling than not? What do you believe about clinging that keeps the clinging going? Why are you willing to sacrifice your clinging for your peace, for your tranquility? So three questions, you know, something like that. We start questioning, because if you have those kinds of questions, you can maybe start teasing out of your mind the underlying beliefs that support your clinging. Why you think it's really important to cling, or to worry about things. Worrying is a kind of clinging. There are some people who feel like it's really important to worry because only by worrying can they show other people that they care. And so the idea of not clinging also can imply some people, I don't cling and hold on to the wanting it to be a certain way, then people won't understand that I care. But you can care a lot without clinging. You can care a lot without worrying. There can be fear operating. You know, if I don't hold on to this, I'll lose it. And paradoxically, sometimes if we hold on very tightly, that's when we lose it. Then we destroy it. So, you know, to question ourselves, to look honestly at what is it we're attached to, and then to, you know, why are we doing that? What do we believe? And why are we willing to sacrifice something better for the clinging? And then see what kind of answers come your way. You might have some great answers, maybe some really wise answers, but are they wise enough? And are you wise enough to really question and engage in a dynamic process of reflection around your answers and your thoughts, your concerns around this? One of the things that supports agitation is doing too many things. And And I've seen that in myself, that as soon as I set myself up to do a lot of different things, my mind begins to spin. And not only is it spin in the moment, but I find sometimes it keeps spinning after I stop doing all those things. So one of the really great supportive techniques or practices for supporting tranquility is to do one thing at a time. You know, and hopefully some people find they do better, to do things better if they do one thing at a time than they do many things at once. It may be, you know, it's kind of embarrassing to admit it, but you know, once the cell phone kind of thing got going, you know, so many of us have cell phones now. Guess what I experimented with once, a few times, two or three times, until I realized this doesn't work, was talking on the phone and looking at the computer at the same time. You know, I can do that, you know, the person's not talking about anything important, so, you know, I might as well, you know, look and read my email or something. And then after a minute or so, what did the person say? You know, that didn't work. And also that kept the mind more busy. It's actually more settling for me to stay present, do one thing. Just listen to the phone, just talk the phone and I talk, not do a lot of other things. So, so one of the contributions of meditation to all this is meditation can show us a tranquility which is deep as opposed to surface. It's the nature of, I think of like the ocean, that the surface of the ocean might be agitated or might be still, but if you go to the depths, just a few feet, 10 feet, 8 feet, 6 feet underneath sometimes the waves, it gets very peaceful very quickly. It's a whole different relationship. It's quite something to go snorkeling or scuba diving and be up on the surface where there's could be quite tempestuous sometimes, the water, and then dive down below and have it be quite quiet. You can look up and see the waves and stuff above. And so it's possible to have surface calm in one's life, but meditation helps us to have this deeper calm to discover a reservoir of calm or tranquility within, a capacity to be still deep inside. Even if some of the surface chatter of the mind is busy, there can be a sense or feeling or a refuge of stillness within. And that's what's, you know, that's what can be much more portable and much more fluid and much more supportive of daily life. Because a surface calm, just be able to keep your mind kind of quiet on the surface, not so many thoughts or something, that can get agitated very quickly. But if the deeper kind of places where the deeper reservoirs of what's important for us, deeper reservoirs of emotional support, whatever, stays calm, then it's very interesting because then it's possible to bring that calm or have that stillness in contact with situations where we're feeling uncomfortable, situations where we are somewhat agitated. And to be able to have both is very interesting. To somehow get stirred up about something. It could be even something good, but it feels uncomfortable. And then have the ability to be present for that discomfort or that agitation without being pushed around by it. And one of the things that supports this a lot is the willingness and the wisdom to know how to be present for something that's uncomfortable. And for some people, what makes them agitated and restless is they get restless when things are uncomfortable. When there's physically uncomfortable, mentally uncomfortable, emotionally uncomfortable, socially uncomfortable, that then we get kind of worked up and get worried or afraid or feel like we have to fix it or change it or, you know, run away or close down or just all these wonderful strategies we have. All strategies which gets us kind of worked up. But if we can feel that something's uncomfortable and know how to be still, know how to be comfortable with discomfort, know how to be accepting of the discomfort, know not to run away or be caught up in it, then there's this meeting place between our stillness and the discomfort, a meeting place between the mindfulness and discomfort. And one of the values of that is that then you can actually see the uncomfortable situation with greater clarity. If we're reactive to it, we don't see it very well. And perhaps the wisdom that's there, or the deeper understanding, the wellsprings of understanding of ourselves and situation, don't have a chance to show themselves. But if we've learned to be comfortable with the discomfort, then there's much more wisdom that becomes available. And there's much more poignancy. And sometimes sometimes it's even in, I don't know if enjoyable is the right word, but there's a poignancy or a tenderness that can be born in that contact with between discomfort and stillness, or discomfort and tranquility, discomfort and mindfulness. So how do we get comfortable with discomfort as a support for tranquility? You got to be uncomfortable. You know, you're not going to read a manual that says this is how you do it. You got to find yourself in some situation where you're uncomfortable, and chances are it'll happen sooner rather than later. And so you got to look for opportunities, and hopefully you're wise, choose the right opportunities, and then experiment. How can you be still? How can you be quiet? How can you be non-reactive in this situation? And only by experimentation will you learn how to do that. For people who do meditation practice, that's a great laboratory, or a great gym, whatever your analogy you like, for doing this exploration. Because sooner or later, you'll get uncomfortable in meditation. It's guaranteed. But you have this kind of, you have the conditions where you're still, not much is going on, nothing has to happen, you don't have to figure out anything, you don't have to do your taxes or something, you're just there, right? And so there's a kind of better conditions to have a heightened attentiveness to what's going on inside of you, what you're attached to, what you believe, what your reactivity is, and all these different things, and a heightened maybe a capacity to be courageous or to have some inner strength to hold still. It doesn't mean you have to hold still forever, but perhaps a little longer than you normally would. So the capacity to hold oneself still and non-reactive is a really great support for tranquility. And chances are that most situations you're in don't require you to act immediately. Especially social situations, which are often agitating. But there's often space for a little bit of, to be still, to hold yourself internally still. Wait. And wait, not only to kind of support tranquility, not only wait to allow kind of your clinging and grasping your activity not to operate automatically, but to wait so the situation you're in can become more, you can register, you can become aware of it more fully. You can become, you take it in more completely what the situation is. So many situations where I've been in where I thought I knew what was needed. I thought I understood the situation. But when I've waited, been still, and let it kind of speak more fully the situation, I've learned it's not what I thought it was. And I've been so, I've saved myself so many problems in my life by waiting. Not a lot, not like waiting years or something. But, you know, waiting 3 seconds. You know, for example, it could be as simple as someone speaking. And, you know, there's a little gap in their sentence, you know, a little gap. And I'm ready to kind of jump in as if, you know, I have the right thing to say at that time. But if I wait 3 seconds or 2 seconds or 1 second, they weren't finished. They were just getting their breath to continue. And then I can hear them out more fully. So the ability to be still, to hold oneself still. And then what are your associations with being still like that? And I can imagine some of you feel some reservations. Being still means being rigid. Being still means a kind of deadening of my excitement and my joy of life and my ability to act more fully and spontaneously. For me, it's the opposite. It's the opposite, that the capacity to be still, to be tranquil, makes much more room for spontaneity, for creativity, for a greater connectedness, greater intimacy with myself and the world than it does if I'm agitated. And it's a sense of intimacy is one of the things that I feel very meaningful, to feel intimate with my breath, to be intimate with the environment, to be intimate with the situation. To really feel a close connectedness and contact allows for some deeper relationship to unfold that can't unfold if I'm agitated, wanting things to be a certain way, or not wanting things to be a certain way, or being driven by the wanting and not wanting. So meditation is a wonderful place to learn to be tranquil. It's a wonderful place to learn the capacity to be still, hold oneself still, hold oneself still. It's a wonderful place to learn the nature of our restlessness or agitation, understand, investigating the qualities of our clinging. At different days, different situations of meditation, your meditation is going to be different. And some days you meditate and you're lucky, and meditation is going to teach you about tranquility. You get to be calm. Other days you meditate and the meditation is going to teach you about clinging. It's not what you hoped for. You want to get calm. And you don't get to choose necessarily what your meditation is going to be about. You get your inner life often kind of shows you what you need to work on if you get quiet enough. And sometimes you have to work on your restlessness. Sometimes you have to work on your stillness. So to learn, meditation is a great place to learn this. And hopefully through meditation practice, you'll learn a depth of tranquility or depth of peace that is freed from or independent from your self-concept, independent from things you want and don't want in your life, independent from what people think of you, independent of your comfort and discomfort. And discover that a deep reservoir within of peace, of tranquility, and then to have access to it as you go through your day and through your life, gives a kind of strength to a life, a certain kind of ease to a life, that I don't think is possible without it having somehow be in touch with that reservoir, to know something about it. And then it's possible to, with that portability of tranquility, to go into situations that are very agitated and difficult and be able to stay calm, or to be able to continue to have breathing room. That's the last thing I'll say, is that breathing, coming back to your breathing is one of the ways to help you be still or not reactive. Take 3 or 4 breaths, 5 or 6 breaths. Just breathe mindfully. And then we have this great expression that you can get breathing room. Mindfulness gives breathing room to your mind and your heart. So there's more room there. So I hope that all of you get lots of breathing room for your inner life. And with that, all that room, that you can be more tranquil. I hope that you use this talk as a way to reflect and contemplate, maybe discuss with others, what your relationship and thoughts are to this topic, this theme of tranquility, and the role that tranquility has in your life. Because it's one thing for me to talk about it, it's something else for you to explore its meaning for yourself. So, thank you.